Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I'm speaking with John Rousseau. John, how are you today?
I'm so good, Saul. Thank you for having me on the show. It's really good to be here with you.
Yeah, likewise. It's so before we get into all the various things we're going to talk about, can you tell everyone where you are today? Like, where you actually were talking online, like we were saying before, and that's, you know, it still sort of blows my mind that we're able to even do that. But where are you?
Yeah, so I'm based in just southwest of London in Surrey in the UK. You've obviously, you know that I'm a South African, a Greek heritage, born in South Africa, yep. Living in the UK, and absolutely, you know, so happy that we can connect on essentially opposite ends of the world, and, you know, good that we have some Southern Hemisphere heritage between the two of us. Really happy to be on the show.
Yeah, likewise. So for people who don't know you, who haven't heard about what you do, just like to kick it off. Do you want to give everyone just like a little bit of a brief overview, short annotated history of like who you are and how you came to be like what you're doing now, I guess?
With pleasure. Yeah. So I'm the founder and chief excellence officer of a company called Fit for Growth. We do executive training and coaching, and we specialize in strategic business coaching, high performance coaching, mostly for commercial leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. So as a young age, I was exposed to business, customer service. Excellence was a principle that I saw my folks bringing to life, both of them involved in, you know, supermarkets, and my mom had a clothing store, and we had a Shell service station at a point, and a book stationery store. And so I just grew up in that environment. So always had a passion for business and for people, and especially the customer interaction, the people skills, delivering high levels of service excellence. And I went to university, studied a business degree, started working for Procter & Gamble. I was with P&G for 4 years. And then my dad unfortunately passed away. We lost him to suicide. And it was a crazy thing in our lives at the time. You know, he was a man who was loved by his community, served with all his heart. There were 2,000 people at his funeral. So for perspective on how much loved he was, and nobody saw it coming. And 6 months later, my mother was diagnosed with colon cancer, and she unfortunately passed away 2 years after that. So within 2.5 years, I lost both my parents to crazy diseases. You know, suicide is a mental health disease. It's not a crime that he committed, but we lost him to a disease. We lost my mother to a disease. And I just thought, you know, if there's one thing that I want to do is make sure that, you know, people don't go to greatness, don't go to the grave with greatness inside of them. My dad should have been, you know, building more businesses. He should have been teaching people about businesses, but he went to the grave with greatness inside of him. My mom was an amazing cook. The coffee shop that they had, you know, there should have been more coffee shops. She should have had a recipe book out there, and, you know, her recipe should be all over the world, but she went to the grave with greatness inside of her. And I decided that my purpose would be to liberate greatness in others, to help them unlock what their innate gift is that they have to share with the world, and that I wouldn't want people to, you know, go to the grave with greatness on my watch. Liberating greatness came into play where, you know, I speak about how I exist to serve by liberating greatness. The book that I've released recently is called Liberate Your Greatness, and really designed to help people go to the next level personally and professionally. So dad passed away almost 20 years ago. From that moment, I was involved in, you know, family businesses. I started consulting, picked up some really great consulting clients, wanting to get back into corporate without going back into full-time corporate. And just, you know, one project led to the next project. We eventually moved across to the UK, and I took on corporate roles actually again in the UK, just recognizing that the move from South Africa to the UK, I didn't have the same network in the UK yet. And during that time, felt very driven to eventually get back into my own business. And it was actually during the pandemic where I felt this call on my heart that now was the time for me to step up, serve at a higher level, and help people, because I could see the struggle that people were going to go through. I could see the physical pandemic that we were all experiencing. I could see the mental health pandemic that was coming and the financial health pandemic that was coming. And I just thought that, you know, having seen what happened to both my parents with their mental and physical health, that was why I wanted to step out of my corporate environment, my safe environment, and start my business Fit for Growth to really help people succeed at higher levels. And yeah, started the business in September 2020. So it's been just over 3 years now, full time in the business, and it's been an incredible journey. I get to work with amazing people who are achieving wonderful things in the world. I get to, you know, interact with people literally across the world, either in the corporate environment or entrepreneurial space, and just so happy to be able to serve the way I'm currently serving.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was actually you've already answered, you know, very nicely. One of my first questions I was going to, like, you know, sort of ask how did you I guess like start the coaching aspect, but I guess as like a little bit of a segue to like from what you've already answered, what were you doing like outside of I mean, what you were saying before about working in family businesses and that sort of things before then you took that sort of leap to start your own business, outside of the things you've already gone through, what were some of the other things that you were doing previously that you felt helped you, I guess, on a, you know, skill or and or like emotional sort of level, then to start your business, then to go, I mean, outside of the reasons that you were saying, which are fantastic. Like, it's, you know, if you were going to say any, you know, great reasons to start something outside of, you know, feeding your family and doing all those
yes.
things that we all, you know, do it for from a practical point of view, what were some of the other things that you did beforehand that you felt were like really great contributors to where you are now?
So right from university days, so I think I was, you know, excited or passionate or interested and curious around what makes people succeed at higher levels. How do some people achieve incredible things? What drives them? What motivates them? What inspires them? And how do some others not? You know, it's just there's a difference. So what is the difference? And I studied a lot. I read a lot of personal development books and just found myself drawn to that type of content. So whatever environment I was in, whether it was my entrepreneurial businesses or my consulting environments, or, you know, when I was back in a corporate environment back in the UK and traveling across the world, I was always trying to encourage, inspire, uplift people. I had a Monday Motivator email that went out to 33 countries around the world at one point. And I found myself in different markets around the world, recognizing that people face the same challenges, that corporate cultures at the time especially were encouraging success at all costs. And often that came at the cost of people's well-being, at the cost of their mental health, at the cost of relationships. And I'm thinking there's a better way. There is a better way to succeed. You don't have to do everything at a cost of relationships and well-being. So I would do Fit clubs in the morning with people to get them to get some physical activity. If we were doing a few days training program, regardless of what the content was, whether it was leadership development or sales or marketing training, I'd get them working out together, and just the high fiving after a workout, that sort of generating energy, just created such a vibe. And the people that were at the Fit club were the most engaged and energized during the day, during the workshops. And then obviously during the workshops, that same content, trying to get people to connect on a human level, trying to get them to communicate, to collaborate. And when people communicate and collaborate, they co-create the future. So it was pretty much by chance that I figured out this framework that when you engage and energize people, when you help them drive growth together with empathy and clarity, and they communicate, collaborate, they will co-create the future. And that really became a big part of my framework for the business. And yeah, just having seen a lot of that burnout, you know, in different parts of the world when the pandemic started, and I could see different things coming to place, that's where I was really getting frustrated with. I'm in one organization with a title that is keeping me bottled in. And I felt like I needed to just, you know, open the bottle or rip open the shirt like Clark Kent and say, okay, I'm here. I want to serve. I want to do something. Don't hold me back. You know, you mentioned for the family as well. I firmly believe in, you know, being able to create our own destiny and have our own canvas. And we've got to step out in faith and take courageous action. So part of the freedoms I was looking for was freedom of time, freedom of location, and financial freedom. And, you know, it's difficult to do that in a corporate environment with, you know, a salary and if, but maybe bonuses that may never, ever come. I wanted to have, you know, a bit more control over what I create for my family. And that was a big driver too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's actually now 3 years down the track after COVID for a lot of people. I mean, I'm probably very similar in sort of a lot of ways. And a lot of people that I know would have said, like, even if they didn't start their business, like you did sort of around that time, you know, I talked to other people actually, even on the podcast, like especially then around the time, because we started the podcast about the time, interestingly, during like pretty much the start of COVID. So it's been really interesting for me talking to people as that sort of progressed and seeing, and me included, how people's perspective, like in retrospect, about it, you know, what effect or what catalysts actually came out of that. And for like many people, they were really good. And for a lot of people, for some of our clients, it was very, very hard. But then interestingly too, with some of those people that maybe even sort of burnout that they didn't even realize they had. I'm sure with what you do, like maybe you sort of see that a lot. Like people don't even, you're in the middle of something, in the middle of like the battle or the, you know, or just the drudgery or the normalization of just like the things you do every day. You don't realize you just kind of burn out until some catalyst like COVID comes along, we have a reason to go, oh, hang on, you know, there's a moment for reflection. But something that's funny, and maybe this is like something you can talk about too, like if you've sort of encountered this with clients or even with yourself, is that it still strikes me as kind of amazing that it does often take such big things like a COVID or like these kind of like world-changing events. Like sometimes it's, what you said, it's like the passing of a loved one, which I can relate to as well. Like it's these things where you go, hang on, but it still amazes me that it still often takes those things like to actually be a catalyst. And like, how do you find when you're talking to people, when you're, because you're obviously in the business of sort of change and that's growth, yeah. And in that business, like that's kind of, you know, a currency in a way, you know, that you're kind of working through that with people. So how do you speak to them when there's things become very apparent about change that they might want or need? That they, you know, come to a realization about, how do you work them through that, given that we've just sort of talked about often, you know, it's these big extreme things that are the catalyst. Now, how do you then bring it back to, let's just do it now, you know?
Yes. Yeah, change is a big topic for us all. So there are two types of change. There's change that happens to you and there's change that you make happen. And you think about everything that's happened over the past few years with the pandemic and, you know, a lot of the politics, geopolitics internationally. We've got two wars in Europe at the moment. There's a lot of crazy change taking place. We're actually living in an era of accelerating change and what AI has done to change the game. So a lot of change happening to people that they can't necessarily control, and then change that you can proactively control. So if we have a look at the change you can't control, people typically have three responses to change. They either fight, take flight, or they freeze. And you would have seen that during the pandemic, right? If you just think back on what happened there, people like you and I decided, oh, this is our time to fight. This is, we got to do something. We got to make a difference. We can start something. You can start a podcast like you did, or you could step out of a corporate environment like I did and start a coaching business, because now's our time to fight. This is our cause. Level up, do something. Don't just sit back and watch what's happening. Okay. And that's what we did, right? Other people were like, I'm not up for this. And they took flight. They were like, I just got to hide if that's the case. And some people literally just froze. They literally said, I don't know what to do. I don't know where this is going. And they lost 3 years of their life because, they didn't do anything during that time. So I think it's important to recognize that. And if people are in a position where they're frozen, to say, well, make a call, make a decision. Like, what's the cause? What's the purpose? What are you trying to achieve? And then to demonstrate courage and actually take positive action. And courage is not the absence of fear. It's acting in spite of fear. It's recognizing the fear. It's putting a label on it saying, this is why I'm afraid. Okay, now that we know that, what's one positive thing that you can do to move forward? So I really do try and help people identify those fears. And we have a process of taking them through, you know, demonstrating courage and what that looks like. And then, you know, from a proactive change point of view, my Liberating Greatness framework starts with awareness, where I say that all proactive change starts with awareness. You need to be aware of where you are now and where you want to get to, so that you know what the gap is, and then you can decide what path to take. So I really do help people try and understand whatever situation they're in, what's the current reality and what's the desired future reality. And when you know what the gap is, you know where to go from to. So change is a big topic and, you know, something I'm super passionate about, helping people accept and embrace change.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, no, it's very obvious when you're speaking about like the passion that you have for it, which is, you know, I mean, it's such a sort of intangible thing in a way when you talk about passion, but then it's sort of this ultimate irony. It seems it's so intangible because it's a, you know, it's sort of a concept, but then it's so tangible and obvious when you see it. Like it's really clear to everybody. It's like one of those things. I feel that, you know, with some things you have to have more expertise to identify something, but with that, most people just, you know, see it straight away and they know it. I mean, when they see it, because they can see it and then probably feel it too. I'm depending on your perspective about, you know, life and the world and energy, etc. You know, and that everyone's got their own way that they view that, but it sort of ends up being the same thing, I suppose. When it comes to, I've for one reason or another on the podcast, I've ended up speaking to a lot of people like yourself who are actually like really super passionate about helping other people, and a lot of those people are consultants or coaches too. And but I've maybe before COVID, like I don't know a year or time frame, but there used to be this thing which is obviously still out there of people identifying themselves as, you know, a business coach or business consultant or then a life coach. But I've sort of seen this shift, which I find really good, but I've seen this shift where those two things, it's almost like a natural shift in sort of my mind of where those two things of personal and business instead of separating them off into two separate things. There's more people who are addressing both those things, which makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, because they're completely integrated. You know, you're not yourself one moment and then just the business owner the other. Like, you're always you, and you've always got And if you're talking with your, I mean, you might put on a different like front or persona perhaps, but you're still you, right?
100%. It was Stephen Covey that spoke about how private victories precede public victories. And I think that's such a great philosophy. You know, what happens in your personal life, in your private life, actually precedes what happens in your public, in your public life, in your professional life. So it's why in my book, in my teaching, my coaching, I talk about personal mastery and professional excellence. And a lot of my clients are a little bit surprised in the beginning when we start our coaching journey, especially in a corporate environment where they've been put onto this program, this high performance program, and they realize how personal it is. They thought it's just going to be about, you know, the commercials and about, you know,
that's interesting.
Driving strategy. And I'll just share with them, you know, I care about you as an individual. I want you to thrive personally and professionally. I want your relationships at home to go to the next level. I want you to be healthy and happy and full of abundant joy and energy because you've got the strategies to generate that. And, you know, I think back to my dad and the fact that he was burnt out. He was overweight. He was tired. He wasn't sleeping. And that's why he didn't succeed. You know, that's why he took his life, because he just didn't have the strategies that we now have. So there's no reason why people shouldn't have those strategies now. So absolutely, I agree with you 100%. So the two, the life coaching, the business coaching, they are intertwined. You help people see succeed personally. That spills over to into their professional life. And then they're in a better position to accept and embrace the strategies and the skills that they need to go to the next level in their careers or their businesses as well. So very much focused on both elements.
Yeah. I think there's obviously, it's a good time, I feel, also like we're saying, those merging of things and then including, you know, more knowledge, more conversation around fitness then too, and like fitness in your life and your habits, and having something like COVID that was a good Kickstarter, sort of in a way not for everyone obviously, but you know, for that almost like it seemed to be, I mean, this is me maybe projecting this onto it, you know, because it sort of simplifies things, but yeah, you know, maybe it's true, I don't know. But like that, a bringing together of more conversation around, you know, fitness and personal life and business, because I don't know what it's like in the UK. In the UK or like other areas overseas, but I know in Australia, like there's some very large percentage of all businesses like small business. So, which when I sometimes reflect on that, I'm like, wow, that's like a lot of people, and just about everyone that I know, like even at squash, I play squash, like even at the squash club, and even you know, other people, obviously. Business friends, like everyone is, not everyone, but just about everyone, like, runs their own business. So there's like a lot of people out there that are doing their own thing. And then they've got families and they have to like juggle. And they are like, well, I know what you're probably is going on with you, because it's going on for me. There's like late nights and this and this and this and, you know, trying to juggle everything. So, which is, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way personally. I think it's great. And it gives you, you know, flexibility and all that too. But like when you're working with people and businesses, do you tend to work with certain sorts of industries or sizes, or is it quite broad?
It's fairly broad. I think my sweet spot is probably with the entrepreneurs and smaller global companies rather than the large multinationals. So I have worked with organizations where they have 40,000 people or 15,000 people. But organizations between 500 to 1,000, and from a corporate point of view, I find, 500 to 1,000 people globally, I find that's the sweet spot, because I get to go deep in the organization with my team, and we can serve across markets, and it becomes a culture in the business that we're, our principles that we're teaching. And then with the entrepreneurs, I just have a passion for entrepreneurs as an entrepreneur, and you'll resonate with that, Sam. So all those things that you mentioned, the late nights, the early mornings, yes, the flexibility and a lot of work, right? We're juggling family and business and, home life and trying to get some exercise in every now and again. It's a juggle. So I do have a passion and a heart for entrepreneurs. And whether you're an entrepreneur or in a corporate environment, it's important to take care of your well-being. It's the whole oxygen mask. Put your oxygen mask on first, because everybody needs you to be able to breathe and survive for you to help them out. So we got to remind ourselves that self-care is in the service of others. It's not selfish. It's important. And I know if I haven't exercised for a couple of days, my wife will say to me, when are you getting out? When are you doing a run? Cause she knows I'll be a better husband. I'll be a better father. I'll be a better coach. I'll, be a better entrepreneur when my mind is clear, when I've had a bit of exercise as well. So it's important for us to get that in.
It's really true. Yeah. Was the original, just, I guess, on a terminology point of view, was the Fit for Growth name like for the business, because that's it's also online a platform as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, we've got an online platform, some online training.
Was that in any way like any inspiration from that, from, this might be really obvious, but like any inspiration from any other passion that you have just generally for sport and fitness, like as well, and other things we were talking about, like that, the importance of that and that sort of holistic viewpoint, was there some element of that?
Yeah, so that's a great observation. There was actually, the whole fitness side. So if you look at the title Fit for Growth, or the name Fit for Growth, it's FIIT. It's a little bit of a play on a HIIT workout, So high intensity interval training is HIIT.
Yeah.
Where the fit in Fit for Growth is focused, inspired individuals and teams. So I try to play a little bit on that, but also the fitness element on, the four initially was around sleep, exercise, nutrition, and environment. Those were the four elements. And then growth, just recognizing if you get the element, you're putting yourself in a better position to grow, and how growth equals change. If you want to grow, something's got to change. It's active. There's movement, and bringing in my passion for health and fitness, and then also my passion for business together, is where the concept of Fit for Growth came into play. It's obviously since evolved, the four is now, different elements of personal mastery, which incorporates all of those personal ecosystem things, sleep and exercise, nutrition. I've included spirit in that now as well, and environment. So personal mastery is the one pillar. Professional excellence is the other pillar. So leadership and, different elements of professional excellence, commercial excellence, sales, marketing, business type skills, and then social impact is the fourth pillar. So it has evolved, but you really did nail it in terms of identifying the source of where the name came from.
Yeah, I just had a little inkling, because I was looking at your website too, and you seem like a reasonably you have like a lot of your references also to different things that you've done. I think it's like a Spartan thing and something else.
Yes.
Like that. John's probably likes his sport, and he probably likes his fitness generally. So therefore, that's probably the pattern finding part of my brain, like being a designer. I mean, I don't think this is like a designer thing for designers, but it is with me. I just naturally sort of see certain patterns in things, and that seemed to be obviously like you've got like a hell of a lot of like metaphors wrapped up in that, which is great. I mean, I love a good metaphor. It's always relatable, and
yes,
it helps to explain things.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for picking up on that, Paul and Saul. And you know, between the two of us, we have two World Cups this year. Between the Aussies winning the Cricket World Cup and the Springboks, the South Africans winning the Rugby World Cup. I think with the Spartan, you're so right about the analogies, the metaphors. You know, what I learned with my Spartan journey was, one, I had to become the type of person that could do those events. The first Spartan I ever did, I thought, it's a 5K. How difficult can a 5K run be? I've never seen the obstacles, but I'm sure they'll be fine. I'll figure it out. You know, I was doing a corporate training event close to the event, the week of the Spartan race in the UK. And, I just thought, I mean, I'm just going to go quickly have a look at the event and see if I can see some of the obstacles. And I saw a few of them. I was like, oh, that looks fine. You know, that doesn't look difficult at all. And when race day came, I realized I was looking at the kids' obstacles. So I had no clue what I was about to face. And brilliant. I registered and I had this big smile on my face and I said, oh, this is my first Spartan race. And the guy at the registration desk said to me, you know, you've signed up for the competitive age group, heat. So I was like, yeah, I figured, you know, I'd run with guys my age. And he's like, yeah, but you know, it's competitive. I mean, it's going to be tough. And I'm like, yeah, I'll figure it out. He's like, okay, but just don't die out there. I thought he was joking, but listen, tough events. 5 kilometers, 20 obstacles. It took me an hour and a half to get through that. I did 150 burpees that day, because I failed you know, 5 obstacles. You've got to do 30 burpees when you fail an obstacle. So that was a massive wake up call for me. And, you know, I went back to the drawing board. I thought, okay, well, how do you master any skill? It's through study and practice. So I've got to study and I've got to practice, study and practice. And I went back, I did another 5K. I dropped, you know, more than half an hour off my time. So I got better at the obstacles. I did way fewer burpees. And I was just better prepared mentally and physically for the event. And then I had to level up if I wanted to do the super. So that was the sprint. The super is 10 kilometers and 25 obstacles. I had to level up to that point where I could do the super. And when I did my first super, I actually got to the end of the race with fuel still in the tank, you know, because I'd leveled up to the degree where I could do the super.
That's pretty good.
I felt good and I still had fuel in the tank. And then I had to level up significantly to do the beast, which is a half marathon and 30 obstacles. And I put so much training in. I was training on big hills, you know, trail runs, big hills. So a couple of weeks before the event, I was doing half marathon trail runs as part of my practice, because that's the person that I had become. And I wasn't that person at the beginning of the year, in my first year of Spartan. And I think that's what I love about giving yourself a challenge, something that's going to stretch you, something that's going to put you out of your comfort zone, is you have to become a different person if you want to achieve the goal that you want to achieve. And then just the concept of the obstacles, how do you go over, under, around, through the obstacles? What's the technique? Because a lot of it is technique. You can't just use brute force. If you've got the right technique, the obstacle's easy. If you don't have the right technique, you're going to fail the obstacle. Simple as that. Doesn't matter how big, strong, whatever you are. You know, it's just you're going to fail the obstacle. So you're 100% right. There's so many good metaphors in Spartan, metaphors in sport in general. And I often find myself, you know, discussing that with clients too, just to bring some of the principles to life on what we're coaching.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm just listening to all those different things you were saying about the different obstacles and different challenges and things that you had to actually overcome. Sounds like, I mean, you can probably speak to this. There sounds like there would be a lot of sort of similes and sort of metaphors drawn from that. You would probably encounter when you're speaking with clients, like of all those same sorts of things. And as you level up, I was just it seems to crop up like every now and again at home. We sort of have these conversations where we reflect on how, when we think back to when we were at a certain skill level in business, like when we did this and what I was like, and we were laughing the other day, or I was kind of reflecting on it and just thinking, I just can't believe that at this certain point that how sort of stressed out or how sort of incompetent I was with like certain things that now I just regard as normal. And I was just thinking back and it seemed like so alien to me. And I was like, man, I'm such a dork. I was like, just so, so sort of slow. But then I remember thinking at that time, I remember like, I'm not sure why I had this particular memory, but I do remember specifically thinking how fast I was and how like, how like, you know, competent I was. And I was like, man, I'm good.
Yes.
I'm really, really good at this. I really got this. I'm like really fast. I'm good on the keyboard. This is like in relation to I'm designing things and like, you know, using Adobe software and like doing this. So I was like really quick at it. But then now thinking back going, I really wasn't like, I was just, it's so funny. And I was just reflecting on it. And we were talking about it going, do you remember when, you know, you said this, when we like started the business and now just going, that's amazing. It doesn't really seem like me. I know it was obviously me, but it was sort of saying that because it sounds very much like it's level, whatever that was, level, you know, 0.5 or something, you know, and then I'm not sure what level I am now. I'm nowhere near the top, but you know, you could argue is there ever a top? Anyway, and there shouldn't be, which is I always remember because I used to do a lot of, martial arts, and I remember our,
amazing.
Yeah. Our grandmaster always saying, you know, it's like one of those really cliched grandmaster moments. The grandmaster's like, okay, everybody, you know, this is like these sort of very minimal words of wisdom and everyone's listening. It was like, well, it's really true and it's really relevant. And him sort of had this really great metaphor that's always stuck with me, which was about this idea that you start at white belt and then you come up. It's like you're adding extra color and you're filling up like the metaphor of the colors changing in the belt to symbolize the different levels that you're at, and you reach first and black belt. But then for some people view that as the end of their journey because they reach first stand. And then once you get to first stand, then sort of saying, this is the real start of your journey is like first stand is the, and then what happens is then you sort of reach this certain crest, and then that's not the real start. The start is then here, but then the end of that journey, then for, you know, him, he was using his own original belt that he had, our grandmaster, who's like, you know, ninth dan guy from South Korea, and his original belt was like, then the idea being that the knowledge that you've sort of gained through the color of the belt then starts to fade and you return back to the sort of the innocence of being a white belt, even though you've accumulated all this knowledge. And I was like, man, that's just so great, because then, and we got to see his original belt that he had when he was the first stand. It was like this really ratty sort of like tattered belt, and it was actually losing color. It was like not white, but it wasn't black. And he had like a new sort of black belt that he used to wear most of the time because his other one was like almost like starting to fall apart. But
wow,
it was great. I've always really remembered that because it's from a visual point of view too, of like learning and filling yourself up, only then to, once you reach this point, you're almost then unlearning because and returning to this original state that sort of comes full circle. And I've always really so liked good. It is good, isn't it? Yeah, it's a nice
so good. Yeah, so good, Saul. Yeah, and just what great lessons from your grand master there. I did martial arts as well, and I achieved my black belt in three different styles of karate, and just the principles of the study and practice, you know, the mastery, the fact that mastery takes time, transformation takes time, and you become a masterful white belt to be able to transition to yellow belt, and you master the skills required at yellow belt to transition to the next level and the next and the next, and eventually you become a black belt, and and then the journey starts there. You know, I just love that sense of humility that your grandmaster described there, that he's constantly learning, constantly growing. He's at a new level, which means it's a new beginning. And it was Bruce Lee that spoke about being a student master, that, you know, arguably Bruce Lee was the master of martial arts, right, to set the tone for everybody. But he said, I'm a student master. I'm always learning, always growing, always evolving, you know, the fluidity that he spoke about. So, I appreciate like the fact that we be like water. Exactly. I appreciate the fact we have that in common too, you know, just that understanding of the martial arts and what that does for, you know, our own perception of, you can study and practice and master any skill if you do the fundamentals over and over again. I mean, you'll remember as a white belt, the punch, 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 punch is fairly boring in the beginning. Mm. But if you stick with it, when you progress and you get to black belt and you're throwing six punches a second, that's exciting because now you've mastered that skill. Exactly with your, you know, like with your design. I got quite excited just seeing you reflect on that and recognizing your journey and thinking how much you've learned, how much you've grown, how easy that seems now because you've done the reps. You've figured it out. You know the shortcuts. You know where you're going a few steps ahead of where you want to be when you're physically doing the work. And that comes with, you know, the building your competence over time, having the confidence to give it a go and getting all the reps in. So, yeah, great story. Really good.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, yeah, a lot to be said for, I mean, for repetition, like in on a skill sort of level. Yeah, I've always found it very problematic just in like at any point in life, like we were talking about schooling before. And that's obviously like a really clear example of like you know, the removal of rote learning from schooling, which I think generally was one of the biggest mistakes that was ever made in schooling. And the idea that, you know, people generally, like, let alone you know, when you're younger and you're just kind of trying to sort things out, that you have the ability to jump straight into some higher philosophical level without having you know, things repeated. Because I'm not sure the best way to explain it, you'd probably be able to explain it more clearly with some of the things you speak to people about, but the idea of like building up just simple skill sort of level, which is just like in sport, like you can be like in squash, for example, like I know my current limit in squash is I can hit the ball great. I've got this and this and this, you know, that I'm aware of because I can test myself against other people who are at similar level and I can win or we have a very tough match. And that makes it really obvious. And you go, yeah, I can see that. I don't have to second guess that. I get that. But then there's certain things through more repetition or through a certain building up of a skill level, you know, it's not other things I feel I'm okay at, where I know I definitely would have to have that to be at the next level in club playing, which has to do with a different sort of fitness. And no amount of me, you know, having better strategy is going to, like, it might be a little bit better, but it gets back to those levels you were talking about before of, you know, you reach this level and then when you're at the next level, you're kind of only able to identify the other level underneath you, like, because you've already been there and you go, yeah, well, that's very clear now. And it's almost funny that, you know, I was like, how could that have been? It's absolutely ridiculous, you know, but you were there and it doesn't even seem like you. Like, how do you, when you're talking with people about like this, I guess the topic that you've got in Liberate Your Greatness, where you're You're saying like you're sort of exploring the connection between personal mastery and a professional excellence. Where does like some of what we were just talking about reaching those different levels come into that, like into, or is that a part of that?
It's certainly a part of it. So, you know, you think about your squash and getting to a new level and then having the awareness of, if I need to succeed at this new level, I need to tweak my fitness. I need to improve my fitness. And, or if I, you know, want to succeed at this level, it's about strategy and I've got to have better strategy. So just having that awareness of what's required for you to succeed at that new level, that is about personal mastery and professional excellence. And it's continual growth. It's continual learning and development, and just having, you know, that self-awareness, I think, is important. Awareness of others, awareness of the environment that you're in is critical. You know, I also think with that journey of mastery and the various sports analogies, the martial arts, the squash, any sport, the Spartan, you know, you've got to have alignment with what your goal is. So awareness is the starting point, where you are now, where you want to get to, and then alignment with what are you trying to achieve here? You know, if you're wanting to play squash at a high level, at a club level, at maybe a national level, at an international level, your strategy is going to be different. Your goals are going to be different. Or you might be saying, actually, I just want to play squash with my buddies, you know, a couple of times a week. You're going to have a different approach. The action you take is going to be different based on the goals that you have. So great awareness of where you are now, where you want to be. Great alignment with your goals, your mission, your purpose, your objectives, your strategies, and then the action you take will be laser focused. And if your goal is indeed to become an international squash player, then you know where you are now, you know what it would take to get there. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to say, if that is a goal, what action do I need to take to be able to level up my fitness, my strategy, you know, tactics, everything so that I can get to that level? So it just, you know, can't stress enough how important it is to be real about where you are now, where you want to get to, make sure it's aligned to your goals. And if it's not aligned to your goals, then the action is different. You know, it's just,
Something's got to give, doesn't it? Yeah. Something's got to give. Like, you know, it's obviously something you've got X amount of time, you want to do Y, you know, if, and then that's going to, like all those things are obviously very logical, practical things.
Yes.
But do you find that those things, because I don't, like I often have to think about those things, say in a project management sense, for projects where I go, you know, I really have to get on top of this. I'm going to have to let this go or allocate that to this person. How, do you find that that is something that some people, or like, you know, lots of people or nobody actually sort of overlooks, you know, in terms of like just that really nuts and bolts use of time, which is like sounds like such a simple thing, but it's something that, as you know, I'm sort of like trying to go, oh, how can this be better? Could this be more fine tuned? And sometimes you come to these realizations about going, man, I'm just not really just not using my time very well. It's just this whole just losing when you actually observe it, like on reflection. Do you find that people you talk to that is a issue for them?
Yeah, time is an issue for so many people, you know, especially with demands on our personal lives, our professional lives, and, you know, being able to you know, use technology to improve our productivity, but sometimes it also means that we just have so much in our calendars that we don't get to the things that matter most. So from a productivity point of view, you know, productivity is a choice. You know, how you invest your time is a choice. We all have the same amount of time every day, and some people choose to invest their time and their energy and their focus in different ways. And there's no judgment on that. You know, I think we all make that mistake, and you and I both will find ourselves in situations where we're like, wow, I'm spending so much time on this. Is it the right thing I should be doing? Should I be doing this? Do I need to delegate it? Is it aligned to my goals? you know, you spoke so passionately when we connected earlier about, you know, homeschooling, you know, your 13-year-old and just, you know, choices that you make for family, right? So that you're deliberate, you're intentional. This is a priority. This is how we do life. It's important. And it's going to be a big rock in your life, which I respect. I think it's so, that's so cool. And then, you know, we have to make choices of what other big rocks do we want to focus on? And make sure that we're not doing, you know, lots of small little things that take up a lot of our time, but we are focused on the needle movers. So when I'm encouraging clients, and something that I try to do in my own life as well, is blocking time. I read something really, really interesting recently where they spoke about, some people are managers of time and some people are makers of time. Makers in time, and the managers block 1 hour at a time or 30 minutes at a time. So 30 minutes, 1 hour. The makers, the creators, the artists, the, you know, podcast hosts, the, you know, the coders block 3 hours at a time or 4 hours at a time because they want to go deep. And I think that's such a great example of what a big rock. Yeah, really interesting, isn't it? You think about when you're designing and.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if that's me, like as you were saying, I was like, what do I do? Yeah, I'm in that second group, you know. I mean, I find I've certainly been, you know, always, unlike a lot of people, use some different project management tools, but one pattern that has occurred probably even more in the last 12 months as we've been just sort of rethinking what we want to do, you know, how we want to spend our time together as a family and with work. And that has meant with a lot of different areas, like this sort of weird dichotomy of getting more things to do particular things and a removal of a lot of other things. And that's included, you know, actually looking at, you know, like even tools, just like, you know, tools that I had always used, actually just going from my previous assumption of like, I need them and I like absolutely need to use them because I always have, and it's really important and I can't have it any other way, to going, but do I? And then, but even then, if the answer has ended up still being, yes, I do, it's been a good process to go through because then at least I've been sort of trying. I mean, I'm far from perfect. There's still like a whole heap of things. So I'm like, I'm just not going to think about that at the moment. You know, that seems like too much work. but some of those other things, just going, yeah, I looked at it and yes, I do, because I thought about it, I realized that it saves me time and I never thought about it like that before. So it actually does. So even though the result wasn't that I trimmed the fat, that I realized that it was effective. It was still a good exercise to go through, which kind of like leads me, I was a little bit of a segue into just asking about something, which is like, I mean, when people want to start, like say somebody's stuck in and they're finding it hard to start something, unlike a lot of us, they're like, I don't know what to do. And just start, I don't know exactly which path to start, and that leads to procrastination, etc. And then I was not going to do it at all. Is it, do you find it is, because I'm a little bit torn on this, so I'd be interested to hear your viewpoint as to whether you think that people, before then they start and they're having trouble starting, that they, it's good to, or at least beneficial to, start almost anything, like any part of whatever that is, just to get that habit going initially? Or should they, you know, think about that more carefully and start the right thing first?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there are a couple of things there. So the first is to get everything out of your head onto paper. When you can see it, and it sounds like you and I are both visual as well, so this will definitely help us. And I find it helps, you know, even those that aren't visual, just to get it out of their minds onto paper, and they can see a physical list in front of them. and then to prioritize, you know, like what are the big rocks? You know, if you, if they're really important to you, if it's a big rock, you need to make progress almost every day on that big rock. And sometimes that just, it's uncomfortable. But when you start, you're going to start building momentum and you, you know, you just, you pick up the pace on certain things. I remember thinking when writing my book, I was just, I was procrastinating on it. The book was a concept for 3 years. I had the title, I had registered a bunch of things and I'd gathered all this information and then I did nothing for months on it. And I realized eventually, okay, well, the only way to make this happen is to prioritize it, block big chunks of time. You can't do it an hour a week. You can't do it an hour a day. You need days at a time to get into it. And some days I wrote 1,000 words. Some days I wrote 4,000 words. And, you know, it just meant that if it's a priority, you have to allocate the time for it. Because what I was doing before that is I was doing all the other things around it, you know, the fluffy stuff. And, and I felt like, okay, cool. I'm doing stuff for my book. Well, where's the content? When are you going to actually write some words? You know, and that was the important part of it. So I really think, you know, clarity on what's required. I also think sometimes we overthink how much time certain things are going to take. So we procrastinate for days, weeks, months, maybe years. And then eventually we get to the thing. We get to the thing. It's like, it's a 10 minute task or it's an hour or a day or whatever, you know?
Oh, true. I just did that the other day again. It was, I think like you've really hit the nail on a important sort of head there, because I think that's been a recurring thing for me that happens every now and again. And if it's for me, then it's definitely for most other people too, where you're going, it becomes bigger in your mind because you're thinking about, which kind of leads back to, I guess, the original question is that if that's the case, then is it still of some benefit then to start anything? Because then you're starting you're a little bit closer to starting a, you know, habit. Obviously, it depends on what the task is. Like if you're writing, you actually just like, you can't just, because you've got to get in the zone, you've got to be thinking and you have to have like a certain flow that takes longer. So it does depend on the task at hand. But then, that's, as you were saying, that I was like, yeah, that just literally happened with a specific thing the other day and it ended up literally taking me, I mean, it wasn't, you know, anything super significant, but it was like, oh yeah, right. Okay. That's not that I was really thinking it was going to take some huge amount of time anyway. I didn't even think that through. It was just, just put it aside and, you know, didn't even analyze it.
It's
true. I think that's maybe it's like an untapped sort of, like core thing. I'm like, you're the expert in this area. So like, is that very point, like that individual point, something that crops up all the time with people?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's looking for ways to become more productive. And when I think about productivity, I'm always thinking about effectiveness and efficiency. So you want to get the job right. You want to get the job done in the right way. That's effective. And you want to be efficient with your time, you know, so having that list of things to do, you're going to have certain things blocked in your calendar, you know, whether it's an hour, 2, 3, 4 hours blocked to, especially if you want to go deep, to have that 3, 4 hour time blocked, to go deep. And you need to have a list of the little things to do. So, if I'm boiling eggs in the morning, I'll set my time and it's 6 minutes. Okay. So what do I do for 6 minutes? I can watch the water boil and, you know, wait for the eggs and maybe do some toast. Or I can quickly sit down in front of my computer and bash out a couple emails on the small list, on the quick things to do. And I know I've got a deadline because the time is going to go off in 6 minutes time. I've only got the 6 minutes, you know. And I think that's quite a nice opportunity to just recognize if you've got a deadline, that helps you raise necessity. If you're saying, okay, it must be done by the end of today or it must be done by the end of the week and you make it a must. I think if we give ourselves a month to do things, it'll take us a month to do it. If we give ourselves a day to do something, it'll take us a day to do it. If you give yourself an hour or 6 minutes to do something, that's what it will take you, obviously depending on the task. But if we're realistic about how long is this task going to take me and how big a priority is it, where am I going to fit it in? Just put it into your calendar. Just get it done. Put it onto the list. I just find that really helps with my own productivity. And something that I encourage my clients on too is,
that's something we can control. It's in our control.
It's like the traffic on the roads. Like as you were saying that, I was like, that's just like on the traffic on the roads. Like they always say, like the traffic strategists, I'm sure they have like a proper name, but the people or the town planners, traffic sort of planners, and people are going, you do realize that the solution like isn't just to build more roads. And they're like, no, I've got to build more roads. And then there's the more cars just like fill up the roads. You know, it's like they just like fill up the time. They, you know, you fill up the time if you're given, like if they're given instead of going, the solution is more roads because we've got too many cars, you know, hasn't then addressed the fact that, you know, in that instance, maybe like the way the roads are going or the fact that, you know, there's not a good, there's not enough trains or buses or that, you know, people or for any number of reasons, like it's this other sort of thing, which is then filled up just because you have it. Like it just gets filled up. You know, that's like a natural, it seems like a natural, like almost a natural state that will inevitably happen like every time. If you let it happen.
If you let it happen, yeah. And you know, with the road story as well, just thinking, well, what's a better strategy? You know, I was in San Diego recently, and in San Diego, they have a lane that's called the HOV lane. It's the high occupancy vehicle lane, and it's a fast lane. And if you got more than two people in the car, you get to use that lane because now you've potentially taken another vehicle or two or three off the road. So not let's have more roads. How do we get vehicles off the road to make traffic more effective? You know, which I think is such a cool concept. So yeah, just having those strategies, and again, depending on what you want to achieve, you know, what are you trying to get through? And as entrepreneurs, as parents, you know, partners, both you and I are thinking about those strategies, Saul, on how do we become more effective, more efficient so that we can do the things that matter most. I'm being intentional already about next year, you know, blocking full days that are I'm calling deep focus days. So on a Tuesday and Thursday, those are going to be my deep focus days where I want to have uninterrupted time to be able to go deep and create content that will serve my audience, whether that's writing or recording videos, because I know I can't just slot those times in on a day when I'm involved in lots of coaching sessions and I'm immersed in my clients' lives and their businesses and what they're doing. I can't just flip the switch and quickly record a video to get out there. I need the deep focus there. So I'm trying to be more intentional already going into next year that those times will be allocated.
Yeah. I think in saying that too, with the deep focus days, you know, I would almost sort of argue that almost everything, like just like thinking about different things you've been saying and use of time and allocation and what you want to do more than other things, you know, that it all seems to like boil down to focus, like as all the different levels of focus that you have on things, you know, as opposed to having, well, and yeah, I guess that includes, you know, lack of, focus as well, you know, because they have to, because otherwise everything's all at the same level, which nothing ever is. Like it's always like ebbing and flowing, like all the time.
Yes.
It's like, water, like we were saying before, like there's always a, you know, some cycle in, you know, there obviously is in nature, there is in, you know, people's personalities, there is in, you know, things you do during the day. So that's like the natural state. So therefore, you know, it's just a matter of, sort of making sure, like, are we able to boil it down to, you know, just having that exact right focus and identifying what that is. That's obviously it's a thing we've been, speaking about, but what do you have to say about that?
I think focus is critical. You know, if you want to achieve anything significant in life, whether that's in your family life or at work, you need to be able to focus. And I love what you were saying about the ebb and flows, because it's not constantly in a still state that once you achieve it, it stays at that level forever. I like to think of the idea of a graphic equalizer. you know, where you've got different levels and the sound in the room changes based on the people in the room, the size of the room, the environment. There's so many different factors. So you constantly have to be aware and say, okay, well, what do I need to dial up and what do I need to dial down a little bit? And, you know, boost this a little bit, boost that a little bit. And then you just get that sound. Okay, we got the balance for this room, for this occasion. So to constantly be aware of that and say, okay, well, you know, have I been spending enough time with the family? No, I need to dial that up this weekend. Or I need to dial that up this month, or this coming year. And let's create some cool experiences for the family. How things going, you know, with, as entrepreneurs, with sales, with marketing, with actually doing the work. Where do you need to dial up and dial down? And then based on that, that's how you then, you know, schedule your priorities. So yeah, absolutely. The ebb and flows, the achieving that work-life balance is ongoing work. It's not something we do once and we set in stone.
Sounds like Bruce Lee was right when he said about water. It's interesting because we, because I used to do taekwondo, but then hapkido. And Hapkido's primary principle, like it's kind of underlying philosophy, which isn't dissimilar to like a lot of you know, aspects of different martial arts, but its specific philosophy is you know, water principle, is that you, unlike what the Taekwondo's of the world and the karate's of the world, which like are classified as a hard martial art, Hapkido is a soft martial art, although, like, you know, it's kind of ironic because it's always incredibly painful, so it's not particularly soft, but it's but soft is actually always like more painful than doing anything else because you're doing like joint locks and all that sort of stuff. Uh-huh. And but its principle is that you never meet force with force. Is that you meet force with like moving with that force and using it like, you know, against itself. You use the force, which is why it's, you know, it's great. And some elements of it or similar things are often used in like, you know, the police forces of the world, because a smaller person can easily, you know, sort of handle a larger person with good technique. And it's sort of interesting because that idea of flowing with water, you know, if you were to just take the general power of like the ocean or water in that sense, like in that big sense, makes absolutely no sense to, you know, to fight against something that's flowing this way. You use the way it's going and then you're able to redirect it, or you're able to, like, you know, turn it around, you know, against it, but you're still using its own sort of energy. And yes. And I've always, that was been, apart from just really enjoying it, probably in many ways more than Taekwondo, just because it's got all these really technical sort of engineering aspects to it, that it just doesn't, like, it just doesn't work if you don't do it right, as opposed to you can sort of get away with doing punches and kicks and it works. It's just like hit stuff and you can like hit better or worse, of course.
Yes.
But like you're doing Hapkido, you do it wrong. It just doesn't work. Like it's like easy to resist. Like, what are you doing? And yeah, but it's this sort of idea of using things like that's kind of always stayed with me. I'm not sure if it's actually translated into my life. Maybe it has, maybe it hasn't. I don't know. I haven't really reflected on it. But it's always seemed like something really important to me, like as an idea.
I love that. It's such a great you know, concept there, on how do you harness the energy that's coming towards you, not oppose it, not you know, feel like you have to counter it in any way. But recognizing this energy is something that you can tap into, you can harness it. And if you use it correctly with the right technique, you've got, you know, a joint hold, or you've been able to apply force without using your own force, but using the right technique. I mean, that's a great strategy for life or business as well. I think a lot of times people feel that life is happening to them, where you know, potentially it's happening for them. That energy is coming towards you for a reason. How do you utilize it? How do you harness it? How do you accept and embrace it? And almost that physical embracing of that energy moving towards you and have keto.
Same thing, yeah.
Utilizing it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's a great way to take that into what we've been sort of speaking about. That's exactly the same sort of thing. So you've kind of just put that thing that I always knew was important into focus. So thanks.
It was a pleasure.
I finally got it. Thank you. Yeah.
My absolute pleasure. That's the power of us being on a session together or on a podcast together.
Amazing. Yeah, no, that's right. So I got a big, very high level question for you, John, which is what is greatness? Like, how would you define greatness in three words? No, just kidding. No, how do you
in
define
three words.
If you had to.
So if it was in three words, I might need four if I use the word greatness. But for me, greatness is within you. I think that's a key message that I would love for all your listeners to think about, Saul, is that greatness is within each and every one of us. And it's going to be different for each and every one of us.
Mm.
You know, I think that your greatness, then the reason I want to liberate your greatness is because everybody around you benefits from you being the best version of yourself, the best, truly authentic you. I will always be the second best Saul Edmonds. I'll always be the second best anybody else. I'll never be anybody better than who I can be myself. I'm the best John Russo that I can be and I want to be. So I want to be the GOAT, the greatest of all time when it comes to the greatest husband that I can be for my wife, the greatest father that I can be for my kids, the greatest coach that I can be for my clients. Not the greatest coach in comparison to anybody else, the greatest that I can be for my clients, for the people that I'm serving. And I think if we just take away all comparison and we just recognize greatness is within us, it's our gift we get to share.
Mm.
We can, you know, apply the principles and strategies to liberate our greatness. That becomes quite a freeing thing for a lot of people. So I would encourage people to just think about that. Greatness is within you. How do you liberate your greatness? How do you share your greatness with the world?
How do you, like, I always find it's really interesting hearing you say that. And you might hear like a lot of people saying like similar things, and how people will often use, you know, things they hear often and they call it a cliche. It's often used, like the idea of it being a cliche is often used as a dismissive sort of term that then, because it's said so often, that things are important. But I actually was just thinking about this the other day. It was just a really sort of quick idea that popped into my head. I was going, I reckon a lot of, like, probably even a majority, I mean, I haven't added up all the cliches in the world, so what would I know? Like, I haven't actually calculated them yet, but I would say like a majority of the ones that, you know, you hear thrown around are ultimately true. Like they are often, you know, like, you know, that like greatness being within you, for example, is ultimately like, it's sort of an ultimate truth. Because it really is, like, it's really true. But then it's something I've often reflected on, is how cliches are often dismissed because they are called that, and that gets back to like a labeling even of something so important, right? You know, you go, even this really important thing, it shows then at the same time as this like really great thing, it shows the power of like labeling of something and going, you know, you can use that for a force for good or a force for not so good, or, you know, the opposite of good.
Totally.
If you just label, it's like the old, you know, mud sticks sort of thing. Like, you call it something, and even if people go no, then it's still there. But it can be the opposite, and you can use it the other way, to like the good way.
Absolutely. And, you know, people will use those cliches, or they hear the cliches and dismiss them. And sometimes it's just about, you know, reminding people of those, what I would call as universal truths, you know, and you said it, some things, there's truth in that cliche or something that you've heard over and over again. And how do we use it then? You know, I remember running a courage session for one of my clients when I was still testing my framework before I stepped out of my corporate role, and you know, encouraging them that magic happens outside the comfort zone. I mean, how many times have we heard that, right? As you see the little circle and the dots on the inside, and it's like comfort zone, and you see another circle and the dots on the outside is like outside the comfort zone. Magic happens outside the comfort zone. And I was encouraging my client to demonstrate courage, and I put the, you know, finished the call, hit end on the Zoom call, and thought to myself, when are you going to demonstrate some courage? You've said you want to step out of your corporate environment, but you haven't yet. When are you going to demonstrate some courage? Now's your time. Magic happens outside of the comfort zone. And sometimes I think we just need the right environment or the right situation where that truth is revealed, even in the cliches, you know, even in something that we've heard a gazillion times, even like the revelation that you had today about your Hapkido and how you can harness that energy and how you can apply that. You've mastered that martial arts. You've understood that principle. It's come to light in a slightly different way for you today because of the conversation, because of the context that we were talking about. So, you know, I'm all for people, you know, thinking about those phrases and embedding them, and even just having the humility to learn and say, okay, well, what does that mean to me today? It might have meant something different 10, 15, 20 years ago. What does it mean to me today? And how do I take that on board? So, yeah, just some great principles, great thoughts around how we use those phrases.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Like say as we're getting, I mean, sort of towards the end of our chat, I'd like to, I mean, there's probably another few hours here worth of things to talk about, I'm sure.
But like, absolutely.
One thing that I know a lot of people very, very strongly relate to, I go to like a business networking thing like every Wednesday morning. And a few weeks ago, the person who was doing their presentation was on the topic of imposter syndrome. And so speaking about that, I know that's, I mean, that's something that you would speak to people about too. But like a parting note, you know, for people listening to the podcast, how do you, have you got any, you know, tip or little, you know, helpful hint that could, you know, help people sort of remove that? Or do they even need to do that or to transition that? Like where does that fit in to things that you talk about with people, John?
Yeah, if anybody is experiencing imposter syndrome, it's good that they're experiencing imposter syndrome because it means that they're at a new level where they're not yet competent.
Right.
The important thing is not to stop there. If you're experiencing imposter syndrome and you stop, the imposter syndrome has won. Where if you're experiencing imposter syndrome and you're like, I don't know if I should be in this room, what if people catch me out? That should be a trigger to say, what do I need to learn? What I need to, you know, what skills do I need to acquire? And I always think, when I think skills, I always think mindset, skill set, tool set. What mindset do I need to have? What skills do I need to acquire? What tools do I need to become that person that is no longer an imposter in this environment, but a, you know, somebody that's earned their place in this environment. So every new level, you're going to experience imposter syndrome. If you're experiencing imposter syndrome, it means you're at a new level. What do you do with that? That's the important thing. And I see that with entrepreneurs. I see that with corporate leaders being promoted to senior levels in the business and saying, I have imposter syndrome. And I'm like, good. It means you're at a new level. You're not yet competent. You can learn. You can grow. You can develop the skills. Who do you need to become? What do you need to do to step fully into that role?
I wonder what it was called before they had that term for it. Was it called nothing, or was it called I feel uncomfortable?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I think you're right. Just I feel uncomfortable, and you know, everything is figure outable. So how do you figure things out? And you know, just reminding ourselves, we've figured so much out over the past however many years, you know, a few decades, and Just recognizing, you know, we weren't always masters of certain things. You know, we weren't always skillful in certain areas. So what did we do in the past that helped us get to this point? And then the new level, and I'm experiencing that in my business as well. I'm coming across things where I'm like, I don't know how to do this. And, you know, is it a case of I need to figure it out, or do I need to find the right person to help me figure it out? But you just realize, okay, well, this is an area that isn't comfortable and it's going to be clunky in the beginning. It's going to be slow, but step by step, we'll figure it out. We'll move forward. And then you get to a point with, you know, like you and your design and Adobe, and you realize this is easy. I just do what I do without really thinking too much about it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know that I said that was going to be the last point, but I just have another one.
Sure, go for it.
I mean, you know, when people say fake it till you make it, like I've always had very sort of torn feelings about that, whether I actually sort of agree, well, not agree with that or relate to it, because it to me it's sort of I understand what it means, like I understand the meaning behind it, but I'd like to get your thoughts on you know, if someone came to you and said, hey, John, like I am, you know, I've just been, you know, faking it till I make it, and I know I'm good at like this and that, like what would you, like as in your, you know, helpful role when you're coaching people and they're going through a journey, how would you respond to them if they were, you know, if they said that to you, what would you say?
I'd positively challenge them that you know, faking it is being fake. It's inauthentic. So I'd encourage them to be, you know, authentic about where they are in their journey. And part of that is being clear on who you are and how you want to serve and how you want to show up, and then show up in that way. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're faking showing up in that way. But if you're saying, I want to be confident, I want to be courageous, I want to be clear in my communication, well, then show up in that way. What will it take for you to develop those skills to show up in that way? And then do that, and then come back and let's get some feedback. How did that work? What worked well? What didn't work so well? What are you going to do differently next time? So for me, it's about being authentic. It's about really being clear on who you are and how you want to do things, and then showing up consistently in that way and developing that muscle, rather than feeling like you're faking it until you make it. It's about do the reps, get in there, be authentic, be yourself, and level up where you feel you need to level up. So quite a difference in approach, you know, encouraging people to start before they're ready, because they must have the confidence to figure it out. Recognize that, you know, the confidence competence loop is an infinity loop for a reason. You don't have to have competence to have confidence. You can have confidence in your ability to figure it out. Mm. And as you do the thing, you become more competent, which then reinforces your confidence. But definitely not about faking it before you make it, more about being authentic, being clear on who you are, how you want to serve, what you want to do, and then getting the reps in.
Yeah. See, this is why you're good at what you do, John. You just explained that very well. Good job.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, I appreciate it. Great question.
Really good. No, that was great. And it helped me to, once again, you've actually helped me a couple of times clarify some things that, well, to be honest, I probably hadn't thought through that much, but that's a nicely distilled sort of clear way to explain it. So thanks. And hopefully your other people listening too. And I sort of said it because I just hear it so often, and I was like, oh, I don't like that. And I get what it's about, and that it's used almost as like sort of a very loose way to explain something that doesn't really represent what it's saying. Like it seems to be, I know it's probably meant in a different way. But anyway, that was great. Thanks. And
my pleasure.
So have you also got, we were saying before, I was going to ask you to tell everyone or to give everybody a quote that you either like, or that something that you just want to say. Have you got that ready, John?
Yes, yes. Thanks, Saul. So I was reflecting on our conversation throughout today, you know, and how passionate both of us are about how mastery takes time, transformation takes time. So the thing that I want to leave behind for your listeners is that excellence is the gradual result of always striving to be better. It's not a destination. It's not perfection. It's about progress over perfection. It's a gradual result. It's a spirit of excellence that if we have that desire for excellence of self, which really is what martial arts is all about, you know, excellence in our personal lives, excellence in our professional lives, we will have the humility to learn, to grow, to get input from coaches, from friends, from colleagues, from, you know, family members, so that we're constantly improving the way that we show up in the world and the way that we do things. So excellence is the gradual result of always striving to be better.
That's a marvelous way to wrap things up. And for other people listening, what's the best way for people to learn more about you online? I know you got a few websites, but what's
yes,
you can say like all of them if you like. What's the, is there a primary one?
Thanks. So I'm on LinkedIn at John Russo. You can find me on other social media platforms too with the same handle. My primary website is johnrusso.com for, you know, individual one-to-one coaching, and then Fit for Growth, FIT4Growth.com if you're interested in business coaching and, you know, you want my team involved there as well. And I do have a book site out at the moment, which is liberateyourgreatness.com, specifically the book's landing page, a bit more information about how to get the book and some of the bonuses that I've included there as well.
I saw that, and it's got a nice big picture of the book with you next to it. It looks lovely. It looks really good.
Thank you. Thanks, Saul. Excellent.
So with that in mind, that's actually it for today, everyone. Thanks so much for listening again to our podcast, and thanks again for listening, and thank you, John, for the great conversation. And we
thank you for go for it.
Yeah,
I was going to say thank you for having me on the show. It's been such a pleasure and privilege engaging with you, having great conversations. I feel inspired by the conversation, so I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks. And thanks, everyone, for listening again, and we'll see you again soon. Say goodbye, John.
Take care, everyone. All the best.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.